Welcome to the Bellisad Bellum Podcast, the podcast for military-connected women, bringing messages of encouragement, humor, and practical how-to on topics that impact their lives most, equipping them to lead in the service and in the home with grace and wisdom.
We care deeply about sharing accurate, timely, and relevant information with our listeners, but neither we nor our guests have a monopoly on truth, and everyone's military experience is unique. The views expressed in any of our content, written or audio, do not necessarily reflect an official or acknowledged Department of Defense, United States Air Force, or other government agency, position, policy, or view.
Welcome back to another episode of Bellisad Bellum. I'm one of your co-hosts, Julie.
And I'm Bernadette.
And today we have a special guest that Bernadette and I know from way back, and we are really excited to talk to her again. We are in three different time zones, and none of those time zones are connected to each other. They are all separated by at least one other time zone. So we are excited that we are getting to talk all together for the first time in probably years.
Yeah.
And today we are going to be talking about women's health and nutrition. We'll let our guest explain a little bit more about her focus areas. But let me first introduce our guest. Today we are talking with Erin Skinner. Erin, would you like to say hi?
Hi, everybody.
And then just to give everybody an idea of Erin's background, like I said, Erin and Bernadette and I all went to school together. I feel personally that we are really lucky to have an incredibly talented and intelligent and hardworking group of gals surrounding us. And several of our close friends are way more educated and experienced in some areas than definitely I am. And Erin, in particular, has gone really deep in a really interesting area. So she is a former Air Force. Her spouse, though, is still active duty. He is a medicine physician and flight surgeon. So she's been doing that since graduation, so 13 years of military experience. But then kind of within the last, 6 years, Erin?
Yeah.
You started working on nutrition and diet and a private practice and all of that.
Yeah, exactly.
And so you are right now in the process of getting your doctorate in clinical nutrition. Is that right?
Yes.
That's incredible.
How's that going?
It's okay. I usually don't find school to be super challenging, but when I interviewed, they said, you should expect to spend 20 hours a week on each class. And I just, in my mind, completely laughed at that and said, that's ridiculous. I'll be fine. I don't need to do that because I definitely don't have 20 hours a week to dedicate to this. But man, I sure am putting in at least 10. I'm in my first class and it is like, they're not there to play, you guys. They're pretty serious, but in a kind of sick way, even though I'm like, wow, it's intense and I'm struggling a little bit to keep up. I am glad that it's not a joke, you know?
Yeah.
So there's that.
Right. And you have, I want to add right there that on top of getting your doctorate, you are also a mom of three kids.
Yes.
Who are boys.
Uh-huh.
And they are still little. Like, they're not grown and out of the house. You're still
yeah,
in the little.
They are little to me. My little one is two, and then they're six and eight are the other two.
And your husband only just within like the last 6 months or so got back from like his second or third deployment?
Yes. Yeah, he was gone half of 2019. But, you know, you ladies have been through the military life a lot too. You know how it is. You just...
Yeah, you don't really have much of a choice.
You don't have a choice. Yeah, you do it. You have to.
Yeah, my husband announced to me the other night, hey, I didn't want to tell you about this because we didn't know how it was going to turn out, but wanted you to know that I was on the short list for a deployment. Nothing's probably going to come of it. I'm like, you know what? Even if you had told me, what was I going to say?
Like, yeah, I was going to ask how you felt about him not telling you.
it was
probably really good. Like, you saved me some anguish.
Yeah, totally.
Right. So your husband has been deployed. You are a student. You're a mom, but you also have a private practice as a functional registered dietitian and nutritionist. And you created the SIBO Academy. Can you tell us about SIBO?
Yeah, SIBO is the most common underlying cause of irritable bowel syndrome, and it's an overgrowth of bacteria in the small intestine that is relatively newly discovered around on the order of around 10 years ago. And so a lot of people with digestive problems don't realize that SIBO is a really likely cause. And as it's grown in popularity, I guess, and interest, there become a lot of healthcare providers that want to know more. So I teamed up with another functional dietitian and we train dietitians how to work with SIBO patients.
And then you have your own private practice, which is located at www.erinskinner.com, ErinSkinner.com for any of our listeners who want to jump on that later. Beautiful webpage, by the way.
Oh, thanks.
It's so crisp and clean.
Thank
it looks so
you.
Nice.
I just redid it. It was a big project this year that I finally, I'm so glad it's done.
And Erin runs her own podcast. And then you've got a BS in dietetics, an MS in integrative physiology. You have a whole bunch of nominations and qualifications. And I'm not even going to read all of them, but they are listed on your website. So if any of our listeners want to go check out all of the amazing.
You ever get bored?
Seeing a lot of those accomplishments has kind of, I'm not going to say that I'm intimidated, but you know, when you talk about that imposter syndrome, and so you look at people who are kind of like your peer and they're doing incredible and they're really knowledgeable in a particular area. And then I look at my qualifications and it's like,
oh,
mom, 6 years.
Julie, no, I have that big time with women who are still in the military in a uniform in any fashion. I think just having yourself gone to the Air Force Academy, it's that just so becomes like a part of who you are. And when I completely separated, it felt like I lost a part of myself. And I see women like you that still are in uniform and I still like mourn it a little bit because I really loved being in the military. I wasn't one of those people that couldn't wait to get out. So I have it too, just kind of like, oh, you guys hung in there and like I didn't, I'm not cool anymore. But I think that's just our nature, you know, to like compare the grass is greener, but.
Absolutely.
I just have to reassure our listeners that Erin is definitely cool.
You're cool.
And by far, one of the most exciting things about to me about your podcast and your work is that Erin is fun. And so if you have any.
Oh, yeah.
Just desire, interest, or whatever to work with Erin. Just be totally relaxed about it. Like Erin is a ton of fun and you'll love it. So anyway.
If you're looking for fun nutrition, thanks, Bernadette.
So let me ask you kind of your origin story or what got you started in this area of expertise? What made you decide to focus on this topic?
Yeah, that's a good question. So when I was active duty, I was a human performance specialist. And part of that was nutrition, but there were a lot of other components to it. And, you know, what we were taught along the lines of nutrition was basically the government guidelines. So I was teaching like Navy SEALs, fighter pilots, high-end performers to follow like my plate, which is like the modern version of like the food pyramid, basically. So I thought I was an expert in nutrition. And then I was having some health challenges back around 2010. And at my gym, they had this nutrition challenge that was not the government guidelines. It was a paleo diet. And I totally thought it was wrong and a joke, but something in me decided to do it anyway. I don't know, but I just did it. I think I was just really looking for anything to start to turn my health around and tried it. And I tell you guys, it was like night and day. It was like a light bulb went off. I immediately felt like a different person doing that. And aside from the dramatic experience I had, it kind of was eye-opening to me in the sense of, wow, you know, I really thought I was an expert on this, but I'm going to have to go back and relearn everything I think I know about nutrition. And so I just started to do a deep dive and became extremely fascinated by the disconnect between what people are taught to think and believe around nutrition and what is true and what is right, and the way that you can leverage that disconnect to create that same life-changing experience in people has really become an addiction for me. Every day in clinic, I get to see people's amazing transformations, and it's just so rewarding. I feel like I'm the luckiest person in the world that I get to do what I do.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So where is that going to go for you in the future? What's your vision of how you take your origin story and leverage it into the future?
Yeah. So right now, my private practice is on the side because I took this full-time job at Adventist Health. At their corporate headquarters, they created a functional medicine clinic to serve their corporate headquarters here where I live. And what's exciting about that for me is that it's insurance-covered functional medicine. So it's the doctor and me mostly, and then the support staff that is giving root cause individualized care, but in an insurance-covered model. And that was a big decision for me to take that because I have had to sideline my practice to some degree. But my passion is for, you know, like we were talking about, where you see people get these life-changing experiences with that type of nutrition and that type of healthcare, but it's hard for people to access because it's currently usually private pay and extremely expensive. The idea with Adventist Health is, hey, let's create a prototype here at the corporate headquarters with the hopes of duplicating out that prototype and putting it across their 25 hospitals. And then hopefully other healthcare systems can adopt that model and basically try to perpetuate the growth of functional medicine.
Can I ask, so what, when you say functional medicine, maybe I'm revealing my ignorance, but
no,
what
not.
Do you mean when you say functional medicine and like what types of clients or people come to see you for that specialty?
Yeah, that's a great question. So functional medicine is primarily aimed at chronic medical conditions that are very common mostly, but the conditions are poorly addressed in a conventional model. So some examples of that would be like irritable bowel syndrome, autoimmune diseases, mental health problems, metabolic syndrome. So like the confluence of like being overweight, having insulin resistance, having cardiometabolic problems like high lipids, chronic conditions like that. What you do with functional medicine is instead of saying you meet X criteria, you get Y diagnosis, you get Z prescription, and it took 5 minutes. Instead of doing that, you spend more time, you get a lot of information from the patient, you try to figure out what the root cause is. So like it's a root cause systems-based approach, meaning I don't just think that diabetes is just your insulin, and I don't just think that your IBS is only your GI tract. I think of you as like a coordinated system where like the mind talks to the gut, talks to the hormones, and there's like there's a complex coordinated system where like to see the root cause, you need to see where maybe stress is causing imbalances with hormones. It's then in turn causing imbalances with digestion, for example. So you go deeper on your understanding of the patient and the medicine, really, to find and address those root causes with a plan that's individualized to that person. So maybe three people have a similar problem, but because they're all unique with a different situation and different preferences and different needs and different abilities, they would probably all three get a different plan. Whereas in the conventional model, you get basically like the diagnosis means like the same treatment for everybody.
That's brilliant. I think that idea, that perspective is something that's gaining a lot more traction within, especially the veterans community, as we look at these people that are just broken after decades of service. And the system has done exactly what you talk about with the conventional model. And we're starting to see you can't take any of these things out of their context and think that you're going to have life-changing success. You have to look at the whole system.
Mm-hmm.
That perspective really appeals to me because at least in my own life, I have seen how something pushing a ripple in the water over in this area of my life has consequences in another area that I would never have thought are connected.
Mm-hmm.
But then when I stop and I, you know, draw the lines out, I can see, wow, yeah, absolutely. I am a whole system. I am a complex system. I'm not,
I'm
not like one little wheel.
Exactly. Yeah. An example that came to mind was, I don't know if this is getting ahead of ourselves, but you had sent me a question about, you know, conventional like military medicine, healthcare. And back in the day, forever ago, back when we were at the Air Force Academy when this started, I was looking for help with some hormonal imbalances I was having. And I just got put on birth control. And it didn't fix my problems at all. And then it turns out down across years of like learning and maturing and healing, I realized I was under eating and over exercising and not sleeping enough and too stressed.
Not sleeping enough? What?
Yeah, right? That's not something you can fix in a 5-minute appointment with like a birth control prescription, you know? We are complex.
Yeah. So you got, I mean, obviously you got into this field and you're really passionate about women's health. And it's easy to kind of see why, because the interplay of different things is fascinating. Okay, I mean, can you tell us more about that? Like, why are you passionate about women's health and what are your areas of like that you focus on?
Sure. So, I mean, I hate to leave guys out. I actually waited years and years to officially like come out, I guess, as like women focused, but I do have a lot of male clients, and actually ironically I get really good results with male clients because they tend to just do exactly what I say and be like really compliant, and I don't know, it works really well. But what That's I've funny. Learned over the years is that in the scientific research, men are used much more often in studies. If they can use male subjects, they will, because it takes out the confounding variable of like cycling hormones to do that. So it makes for a more clean result. But the consequence of that has been that the medical research poorly represents women in many areas. And so I think that that is then in turn reflected by, really, in my opinion, low quality healthcare that gets provided to women. So like that story I shared you is a perfect example of like, really, you saw this underweight cadet at the Air Force Academy come to you, and the only thing you could think of was like to put her on birth control. I mean, it's kind of pathetic. And so after years and years of seeing women come to me in my practice, just having tried their doctor and trying another doctor and trying another doctor and still not even getting the most basic, obvious things addressed, I realized that women are being really underserved. And we want to be healthy. We want to be well. We have a lot of demands on us. And so that became my passion. It's really just to help women to be their own best version of themselves by getting a more comprehensive approach, if that makes sense.
So when you say comprehensive approach, are there specific health areas that you focus on? I know you've talked about metabolism, digestion, and hormonal balances. Are those areas that you picked for a reason? And why are those areas important for women specifically?
Yeah, great question. So that came over my years of, at first I was just, hey, I work with anybody for any problem. And then over the years I realized, okay, I'm seeing these issues with women specifically the most often. And I feel like the functional nutrition approach is most helpful in these areas. So digestive health can be irritable bowel syndrome, but often it's not diagnosed as such. It's just a confluence of digestive problems that are an issue in and of themselves, but also bleed into other areas of health in the long term. And by the way, creating nutritional deficiencies and hormone imbalances and things like that. And then hormonal balance, I mean, I think we can all kind of imagine that's a problem for a significant number of women, but it can be amenorrhea, it can be irregular menstrual cycles, it can be also adrenal problems. We've been talking about the military lifestyle, and it'll often be a military spouse that I see just completely depleted with her adrenal health after just years of moving and uprooting and rebuilding and being alone with kids and husbands deployed, husbands TDY, and you're constantly leaving your support network and trying to establish a new one, but it's shallow, you know. When you keep moving, you can't have a very deep support system usually. So anyway, that's hormonal health. Also, I would put in that I would say like, and this is also in the realm of like metabolic health, there's hormonal balance with insulin and leptin. So like people who struggle with maintaining a healthy weight, with their appetite regulation and sugar cravings, with their blood sugar and their lipids, those would all be in the realm of like metabolic health. And those are really the three categories that have become really clear to me as like the pillars of women health, where women tend to struggle, but the modern world doesn't set us up for success. But we can be successful, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure.
I love that.
Totally makes sense. So, I mean, aside from some of those high level items, you know, are there other challenges that you see women in particular face for health in the digestive, metabolic, and hormonal areas?
Yeah, I think This question actually can get pretty deep pretty quickly. And what I mean by that is I think that women are in such a tricky situation right now, in our generation, I guess you could say, in the sense that we're a little bit like post-feminism. And so there was kind of the world long ago where it was fine to stay home with kids and to keep your kids healthy and to keep your home healthy and like take care of your husband. And that was great. Then there was the world where who cares about that? Not to be like hyperbolic, but you know, it's all about your career. It's the 80s. You've got shoulder pads. You work 80 hours a week. It's all good. That's what you're supposed to be doing. And like, it's not a big deal if you're not.
Like that movie Working Girl, right?
Yeah. Yeah. There was that. Now, I feel like the pendulum has kind of gone to maybe a third crazy place, even though it's not a thing that pendulums do.
Please do both of those things. Yeah, please which do both kind of.
Yes, yes, exactly. Now, yeah, you better have like a career. You're just, are you serious? Like you just stay home with your kids. Oh, but really? You don't like do all the
your
perfect things with your
perfect,
kids?
Right?
And yes. Like, yeah, have them in all the activities and keep your house really nice. I know that women have always had a lot of pressures on them. And I don't mean to diminish any previous times or any women in any situation at all. I think that it's just tricky. Like for men, I feel like it's more clear cut in many cases where, you know, I understand that families are more coordinated with their efforts in our generation, but nobody looks sideways at my husband for working 60 hours a week and being with the kids for an hour a night. That's just what? That's fine. Yeah. That's normal. But if I did that, I would feel substandard with my kids. So I think that women are just – what we end up doing is we end up trying to be all things in all places and perfect in every way. And like Instagram and Pinterest are making us feel like we also need like the perfect house and the perfect coordinated outfits and the perfect everything with like the way we look. So it's just too much pressure. Yeah, it's so much pressure on women and we end up just depleted, stretched too thin.
Yeah, what's the first thing that you drop when you have to pick up all these other things? The first thing you drop is yourself and taking care of yourself.
Absolutely.
I mean, like, I eat my kids' leftover cereal most mornings.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Nutrition is easy to put on the back burner because I feel like there are a lot of convenience options available. And there's always shortcuts you can try to make with nutrition. The toaster waffle, you know, not that I don't do it. That's, like, something that I find that a lot of people will use to carve out more time is take shortcuts with food that they might not even realize are shortcuts because this is just the way people eat now, honestly. But in a sense, they really are. And exercise could be another example of that. And sleeping can be another example of that. The way we kind of put ourselves on the back burner and we sort of get away with it for quite some time in many cases until the problems start to precipitate there.
It reminds me of that scene from Incredibles 2 where Mrs. Incredible has actually gone out to save the world and Mr. Incredible is at home taking care of the baby that has superpowers.
Oh, yeah.
And he is totally falling apart and his best friend is like, when is the last time you got sleep? And he says, well, who takes time to remember that? But I watched that scene and I'm like, yep, that's 100% me. Like, I don't know how much sleep I'm getting. Like, I'm happy that I'm getting any sleep.
Right. Yeah. I'm too tired to realize that I'm tired.
Absolutely. You're totally talking my language and just sacrificing things to gain back time for all the areas that you want to prioritize.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, what other challenges? So we talked about modern diets are maybe primed to convenience and less to nutrition. We've talked about how there's not enough time to do all of the things. There's not enough time to exercise or maybe buy nutritionally dense food, lots of demands. What else?
Yeah, other things that kind of can impact our health. I think that globally, you could also think about COVID has been interesting in the sense that it has challenged the conventional idea of what work can look like, because I know many people in my immediate family and myself included, where we were working full time in person, doing a job that really could be virtual, honestly. And just the corporate culture is not there in a lot of environments, but Now, I'm hoping this can be a win for women in the end, and in one respect, in the sense that now, I was just talking to my cousin about this yesterday. I'm working from home. She's working from home. That would have never, ever happened if not for COVID. But because we're working from home, we've certainly been able to carve out more time and more flexibility and be more present with our kids and just have more like self-care. So I think that that's something that is still evolving. I know, I realize women have been increasing in the workforce for a long time. And so you'd think, I mean, there has been some gains with flexibility as compared to even, you know, before the feminism movement, but I just think it hadn't gone far enough. And I'm hoping this is another step.
Yeah. COVID has kind of normalized like, okay, you are not less valuable if you work from home. In fact, this is maybe the smart thing for us to do.
Yeah.
And COVID just kind of normalized a best practice, if you will.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's obviously some jobs where it doesn't make sense. And there's some people that don't have the personality for it. But for many people, it's fine. The job, it makes it fine, and they're responsible people, and in some cases even do a better job. So yeah, I'm hoping it will stick in some respects.
Earlier, you gave a little anecdote about your own experience with being prescribed birth control. And I kind of have my own story, but you know, in your practice and kind of your time in health, have you seen that come up kind of repeatedly that birth control is the end all solution to hormone problems and it really doesn't work out that way?
Yeah, I'm kind of appalled by, you know, like in medicine and healthcare, I'm sure you know about informed consent. Like you're supposed to, if you're given something, you're supposed to be told the risks and the implications of it. And that's an ethical obligation that the care provider has. And I mean, it's almost daily that I have a patient who's been put on hormonal birth control without being told that this causes nutrient deficiencies. This suppresses your natural hormone cycling. This does not allow you to have a real period when you have bleeding. That's not a true period. That's different. You're not naturally cycling, and it can perpetuate hormone balances further. It can affect fertility in a major way. There's something called post-birth control syndrome where it can take years for women to recover if they've been on long-term birth control, if they even can. I mean, it can take some dedicated support from a nutrition or functional medicine provider to even achieve that. And women are not told any of that. They're just said, hey, oh, you've got this or that like problem that's probably hormone related. Here you go. Here's your birth control. Like they really have not been told.
Yeah, for sure. I've experienced that as well. Just being told the, well, if you're having some hormone problems or your cycle's not regular or whatever, right? Just hop on the pill and it'll help.
Yeah.
It'll make it all better.
Yeah. And they never try to dig into where is that coming from? Maybe we need to figure out why.
I'm probably one of those gals who was not informed, was not told all the consequences, did not take the time to do my own research. Just my primary care provider has the knowledge and experience and I don't. Mm-hmm. They're the expert. I'm not. I'm going to take their word for it.
Yeah.
And I am only now 3 kids in kind of realizing that, hey, I maybe should do some research about all of this. And I'm hearing that there's this growing body of research about birth control and its effects on hormone balances and hormone cycling, thinking I probably should not have taken my PCM's word for it. I kind of have only myself to blame, and I'm not too upset about it because it did not impact my life negatively.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're one of those gals, one of our listeners is maybe listening to this and being like, oh my gosh, now I'm suddenly worried and shocked.
Mm-hmm.
I was one of those people who listened to what my PCM said and didn't find that it ruined my life, but am realizing that I am the only person who can be ultimately responsible for my health choices.
Yeah, there's so much in there, Julie, because first of all, I don't want any woman to feel like she shouldn't have the right to birth control. Or I think birth control has been amazing for women. I'm not one of those people that's like completely anti-hormonal birth control at all. I'm just against women not getting told the pros and cons, the risks and benefits when they go on it. Because as you said, we have this inherent trust that that person is the expert and I can trust what they say and I don't need to look into this further. But I can tell you after my years in healthcare and my years of also just being with my husband and knowing so many military providers that they struggle to keep up. they do their best. They're great-hearted people. They're caring people, and they're wonderful people. But they have been trained in a system that doesn't even teach them a lot of the things that they need to know about nutrition, for sure. The example of what we're talking about and with birth control, they don't even probably know some of the problems. So as you alluded to, Julie, like, you do really have to be your own advocate and do your own research and go with your gut instinct. Huh. It doesn't mean that nobody ever gets away with taking birth control and it's fine. It ends up being fine for a lot of women, but you should at least know what the risks are, you know?
Yeah, that's good. So switching gears, are diet and exercise of equal importance in overall health, or is one more significant than another? And I ask this question because, particularly for military women that have defined exercise and physical fitness expectations and requirements, how do you recommend achieving a balance between the two if some of those physical expectations as part of the military drive certain behaviors and nutrition choices for a military woman?
Yeah, that's really good. So we know that nobody would probably debate this, that nutrition and exercise are both important for health. But to your point, in the military, I feel like there is a skew towards exercise because there's a test. You have to take the test every 6 or 12 months. So if you don't know any better, you think, okay, well, for sure, I need to exercise a lot so I can pass this test. But what I would challenge there is that although nutrition might be a little bit more complex and a little bit more work and a little bit more confusing, you're going to get gains on your fitness test if you improve your nutrition, especially if you're wanting to improve your waist measurement and your run time specifically. So
run time? My ears suddenly perked up because that's the one area that I particularly struggle with.
Yeah. Those are extremely nutrition related. And then aside from just like that military world, I see this with civilians all the time. I think it's, for many people, the idea of like, I join a gym, I go to the gym, I get on the elliptical, I do that for 30 minutes, I do that 3 times a week. Even though that's some effort and some expense, that's a lot easier to do and to wrap your mind around than to change the way you eat, let alone figure out the way you should eat in the confusing world of nutrition. And so I do see that civilians get stuck in that same trap where they're just focused on the exercise piece. But honestly, you can easily undo the benefits you got from your workout in one meal. And most people do. I constantly see people who work out routinely and have a lot of health problems that are nutrition related. So you can't really out-exercise a bad diet is what I'm trying to say. It's just, it doesn't work that way, unfortunately. And I think that people have kind of been sold this story that like, oh, well, if you just exercise, that just buys you all kinds of insurance that you don't really need to worry about your eat, that the way you eat, that couldn't be further from the truth.
So what is a military gal to do then?
Yeah. So it's not that you stop exercising. I would say just start thinking about some of the more basic nutritional concepts. You don't have to completely change the way you eat to start making improvements, if that makes sense.
So I am going to ask you to get a little bit specific, not like tailor a diet for me or something.
Yeah, sure.
Our listeners know, but
yeah,
you know, for a listener, whether it's a military mom or a single person or, you know, a spouse or even maybe a retiree, if they're struggling to make some gains, and they kind of know intuitively diet is where you need to make the first big jump. What should they start with? Where do they start?
So I feel like I've come to a point where I can really succinct it down for people, which is nice. You need to eat a lot of plants and you need to eat some animal protein. I'm sorry. I know some people are offended by that, but the science is extremely clear on that. You need to eat some animal protein. Try to source it well, the best you can afford and the best you have available. Avoid refined carbohydrates. That doesn't mean you can never have them, but the average American gets 70% of their calories from junk calories, and most of those are refined carbohydrates. So that's not just sugar, but any refined flour product. So that would be like a bread, a cookie, a cake, a pasta, a muffin, a pancake, a waffle, things like that. Minimize those foods.
Sheesh, total failure here in our house.
Yeah. So I did Erin's 30-day keto challenge, which I highly recommend.
Hey.
It was Yeah, so I did that and I started tracking my macros, and Erin does a really good job of walking you through that process. I was super intimidated about keto because I honestly did not really even know what it was, but she does a really good job. But so I'm tracking my macros, which are fats, proteins, carbohydrates. And in particular, once I figure out what my carb goal is and I plug it into this calculator, I was floored to realize how many carbohydrates I was just unknowingly consuming. Just had no idea. Oh my gosh, there's a carbohydrate in that. Oh, there's a lot of carbohydrates in that. Yeah. And just had no idea, completely unaware.
Yeah. Yeah. And I definitely don't mean that everybody needs to be on a ketogenic diet at all. It can be certainly helpful for a lot of people, as long as it's done in the right way and healthfully. But yeah, people have no idea that how many carbs they're eating. It's not uncommon for me to see people eating 70 to 80% of their calories from carbohydrates, and that is just simply too high. I don't care what you're eating, that's too high.
So the starting point is more plants.
Yeah. And then the last thing I would say, and these are just like the four things, a lot of people don't focus on this, but quality fats. The vast majority of fats that Americans are eating are inflammatory hydrogenated oils that damage our metabolism, that throw off our appetite signaling and our insulin sensitivity and the way that we crave foods. I'm not anti-fat. I'm very pro-fat in people's diets, with obviously some certain exceptions, but it has to be these healthy fats and not these hydrogenated oils. And that is something that is like not on people's radar. They're eating incredible amounts of these fats because they're cheap. And so they're in everything. Anytime you get food from a restaurant, from fast food, you buy a salad dressing, you buy a coffee creamer, you buy a store-bought baked good, you buy roasted nuts, they're all full of those unhealthy fats. So that's the fourth and most important thing, I think.
And before you get really nervous or anxious about, oh my gosh, I haven't been paying attention, this is going to be so hard.
Yeah.
How am I going to change the bad habits and incorporate healthier choices if the unhealthy choices are so readily accessible and cheaper? I'd like to say that having just recently gone through it, there are a plethora of great options. And I was really surprised, very pleasantly surprised to see how easy it was. And my kids would actually eat it. Like that was my other concern. I'm like, okay, great. I'll cut this thing out of my diet. But I'm telling you, my kids are probably not going to eat whatever, you know, soybean something, something that you're telling me I should use instead. And that did not actually end up being the case.
Yeah, Julie, you crushed it. Good job. I mean, people do get maybe a little intimidated when they hear those things. But like one program I'm building right now is 4 weeks. And it's those four things. You do one thing each week. And it doesn't even have to be perfect. Just take it one step at a time. You know, maybe at first you just focus on getting more plants. And then maybe the next week you look for ways to replace those hydrogenated oils in your kitchen, and you just kind of build from there.
So any other recommendations, especially for busy moms or busy working ladies in this area?
Yeah, what I've been really into lately, because I do work, since I'm at like a corporate headquarters, a lot of my patients are busy professional women. So I've been really on a kick this year of helping women to find ways to make this all more efficient. And the best thing that I've found is basically certain apps, like tools, that make meal planning almost automatic. And so I get women in a routine where every weekend you fire up the app or the website, it's set up for your preferences and your needs. It automatically generates your shopping list. You tweak and modify and swap over a couple of minutes as you see fit. You click a button, it generates a shopping list. This is probably not going to work for you in Germany, Julie, but then you can, here in the States, you can even click a button. It like automatically matches it to the grocery store by your house and delivers it to you.
I saw that and I was so sad.
Yeah, my girl Alidora sees. I hear you. Like when I was in Turkey, it was like you're buying watermelons off of a guy's like donkey drawn wagon. It's a different world, but but you buy the groceries. Long story short, is you buy the groceries somehow, and then when it's time to eat, you just open the app. There's the picture of the food, there's the recipe, you've already got the stuff. It takes the amount of time that you said you were willing to spend when you put in your account settings and you eat it. And that is really something that has been life-changing for women, because we can wrap our minds around nutritional concepts, but who has the time to mm-hmm. go and spend hours a week on like figuring this all out? I mean, you can do it for a month or something, but even tracking macros, I find, is not generally a very good long-term solution for most women.
Yeah.
So we had a listener question a while ago about how can a military gal advocate for her health? And so I'm going to give it verbatim here just to get your perspective on it. So here's the question, quote, "A series of PCMs with poor bedside manner as a lieutenant gave me a sense that I was wasting their time making an appointment with my doctor for this pain or that. Over time, I saw the writing on the wall that our medical system is just in place to keep the flyers flying, check their ears and eyes every year, and to make sure my deployment readiness is green. It gave me no warm feeling knowing that the primary basis of my preventative health care was a self-assessment questionnaire that was reviewed by someone in public health, not someone on my healthcare team. As I'm gazing toward my late 30s, I realize now is the time to be preventing things by catching them early. I hear horror stories about military members being diagnosed with terminal illnesses out of the blue. My question is active duty, what kind of standard care are we entitled to? And what should we be demanding if that standard care is lacking? What steps can I take to get there?"
Oh, such a good question. That kind of breaks my heart, but it's so good.
It's deep.
Yeah, there's so much to that, but
so relatable.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, I am very close to this in the sense that I've been active duty. I've been that lieutenant that was underserved. I've also been the friend and spouse of many, many military like healthcare providers. Well, the spouse of just one, but the friend of many. And I know that they are good-hearted, hardworking people who went into healthcare wanting to help people.
Yeah, absolutely.
But unfortunately, the training is not complete for chronic conditions, as we said, and they are put in a system where, especially I would say for like PAs and nurse practitioners who are primary care providers, but also for many physicians who aren't even residency trained, they're put in this preposterous situation of having to see 20 patients a day. Each one could easily, well, would be in my clinic where I work, an hour-long appointment, but you don't have 20 hours to work every day, right? So what do you do? It just can't be what like military families really deserve. But like the one thing I would say is that the military is doing what is generally being done in primary care across the country. So this is not a military-specific problem. I do certainly think that it would be, and like the military is actually moving this way, that they're moving towards having military members as well as dependents have the option to be seen off base, like by civilian providers. And I think that's great. Not because military medicine is so much worse than regular medicine, but just because I feel like regular medicine is a mess for chronic conditions and primary care. I mean, certainly if I get hit by a truck, take me to the emergency room. I'm so thankful that they exist for trauma cases, but by no fault of the providers themselves who do their very best, like by no fault of them, it is not sufficient. And at least if military members and family members can have some choice, they can at least try to look around for someone who's the best possible fit, like she was mentioning, like bedside manner. Mm-hmm. If you have some choice, you can at least try to go find someone who is willing to have a decent conversation with you and to start to build trust with that person. Aside from that, I would say this is my world with my private practice, is these people who are just fed up with their doctor after doctor after doctor that didn't get them resolution. And if that is something that's happening to you, unfortunately, the remaining choice is to seek private pay services. And yep. I know that that's not something that like military people like to hear, because they're like, you know, I'm in the military, I have full healthcare, I should be able to get everything I need from the system. You should. But in the end, you can't. And like with some things, it will hurt you to delay getting resolution of it. And so if you need to private pay for it, that breaks my heart, but it's also better than letting it
go. No, that's the decision that I made. And I'm, you know, reservist. So sometimes I get on-base military care, mm-hmm. but I'm a spouse. So sometimes I get seen on-base as a spouse. Sometimes they give me a referral. Sometimes they don't even want to talk to me. You know, all the different answers that you could get. And after 13, 14 years, I realized my health will be with me hopefully my health will be with me long after I am not affiliated with the military anymore. Right. And I cannot afford for them to not take this as seriously as I take it. And nobody is going to take it as seriously as I do. And yeah, I wish I didn't have to pay. But if paying my money is what I need to do to get the care that I need so that I can be a happy, mobile 60-year-old instead of a miserable 55-year-old, that is worth it to me. Now, not everybody's going to make that choice. Maybe that is not a trade-off that you're personally comfortable with.
Right.
But for me, that was 100% worth it.
Yeah. I wish the system was better because, I mean, there's also like an inherent ethical thing in there, right? Like, say I have a health problem and I have the privilege to go out and hire a functional medicine doctor to help me. What about the person who can't afford to do that? You know, like the system definitely needs to advance to be able to cover that person for sure. But unfortunately, the state of the system right now is not that way. I wish it was.
Are there specific things that we're shifting towards this outsourced model or, you know, somebody is finding that in their interactions with their doctor, they're not getting what they maybe need? Are there some specific, I don't know, even referrals they can request or should request that would help them with some of that?
Yeah, I think it's important to start with doing some of your own research. And I know that providers would like be mad if they heard this, like, oh, it's so mad when people go to Dr. Google and they come in. Then on the other hand, I would say a good provider is going to appreciate someone who's done their own research if they come into the encounter still understanding that, okay, you have a license, you have more experience. I still respect you. I'm not going to come in aggressive and like with a negative attitude, but you're also like willing to put in some work to look into it and have intelligent questions.
Yeah.
So it starts with that. And then if you go in and you find that the provider is not amenable to discussing with you the things that you found and the things that you're thinking about, that's a sign that you need to find a different provider. And unfortunately, just especially being overseas, I'm aware that having been overseas in the past, there's not always like a lot of choices with respect to providers. So that is a tricky piece of it. But getting back to the land of private pay, there's an infinite number of providers available to you virtually that are private pay. So if it has to go there, sometimes it has to go there. But the last thing that I would recommend is to stick with somebody who doesn't respect you, who doesn't have a good bedside manner, who doesn't listen to you, and to just trust that whatever they say is correct. That's really not the right way to go.
Sure. Well, so this has been an awesome conversation, but Erin, where can, I know Julie said it kind of at the beginning, but where can people go to learn more about you and your work or maybe even get connected with you if they want to?
Sure. So the best place to find me is at erinskinner.com. And there's a contact page there. You can learn more about my practice. And I'm more than happy if someone has unanswered questions or if this has like piqued anybody's curiosity, or certainly if you have some concerns from anything I said, just reach out to me. I'm happy to get back to you via email and continue the conversation.
Yeah. And one of the things that we always kind of like to touch on in Bella Said Bellum is that, you know, one of our enduring themes is that everybody out there, like, you're not alone, right? And so Erin is a mom. She's done active duty time. She's a military spouse. You know, she's had time in the Air Force and all different fronts. So plenty of relatable material there. And so that's just, I don't know, that's so encouraging and so great for, I think, our listeners to hear from. So
yes, you will not talk to Erin and be like, oh, she doesn't understand what's going on with me. No, she absolutely understands kids, deployments.
Yeah.
You get it.
The military lifestyle is unique. I will say that for sure.
Yeah, that's true. Well, thank you, Erin, so much. I was super excited to record this episode. It lived up to my expectations. And I'm now going to end the episode and then go downstairs to my husband and be like, it was a great episode. It was so awesome. I'm so excited. So thank you so much.
And I am going to go down to my refrigerator and find a bunch of vegetables. So start loading up my plate with more greens.
Start perusing those salad dressing labels, Bernadette.
I totally am. Now I'm going to be looking. Now I've been discovered.
For sure. Thank you both so much for having me. This was so much fun.
Yes. Yeah, no, we appreciated it.
Yeah, so glad that we got to catch up with you a little bit. Thanks, everybody, for tuning into this episode. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. And stay tuned for our next episode. In the meantime, let us to the battle.
Thanks for listening to the Bella Said Bellum podcast. You can find notes or resources related to this topic on our social media community. Check us out, like, follow, or subscribe on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Bellus at Bellum. Join us for our next episode, and in the meantime, let us to the battle. We take great care to seek out subject matter experts who are knowledgeable and experienced in their fields to be guests. However, everyone's military experience is unique, and the views of our guests and our hosts do not necessarily reflect an official or acknowledged Department of Defense, United States Air Force, or other government agency position, view, or policy. Content is provided for informational purposes only, and we make no claims representation of official sources.